I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me for a fascinating visit with Jim and Kim Keeter as they share their passion for roses and propelling their business as a wedding destination and much more at the Antique Rose Emporium in Independence, Texas. The Keeters purchased the Antique Rose Emporium from founders Mike and Jean Shoup in December 2022, and it's been nonstop ever since, planting and sharing their passion for the world of legacy roses and the Antique Rose Emporium as a highly recommended Texas travel destination. Back in 2014, I first visited Independence, Texas, and that's when I met Mike Shoup and recorded an interview about his journey propagating antique roses since the late 1970s. Long, long ago, Shoup first stumbled upon neglected survivor heirloom varieties still growing in old Pioneer Texas cemeteries, even though no one had cared for them for decades. He subsequently made numerous cemetery forays to secure cuttings, and thus was born his nickname, the Rose Rustler, and the creation of the Antique Rose Emporium. Fittingly, Shoup's tagline became, "If dead people can grow roses, anyone can." Following the interview with Jim and Kim, stay tuned as we reshare Shoup's classic 2014 interview about his life journey as a rosarian and brilliant, insightful tips about how anyone can propagate and maintain healthy roses organically without utilizing pesticides. Jim and Kim Keeter.
And the yellow rose of Texas, she'll be mine forevermore.
So here we are at the Rose Emporium.
Yes, sir, we are. We're just so glad you guys are here. And, you know, the Rose Emporium holds a very special place in our hearts, my wife's and mine. I'm Jim Keeter, and my wife is Kim Keeter. You know, Mike and the Rose Rustlers, that whole history.
Technically, these were lost roses surviving on their own.
They were surviving on their own. They're tough old birds, and that's what drew my daddy to these roses. He was real big on native plant material as a landscape architect, and these are very much like that same tenacity that the native plants have. And it was real funny. We were giving a talk somewhere together right after we purchased the place, and Mike mentioned that he walked into the cemetery and there was this rose that had been there for like 80 years. And he's like, "Hey, if that dead guy can grow it, I stand a chance." And so now I get to stand a chance.
There are so many varieties, and what we grow in this area are ones that do really well in the southern climates. But we do have varieties that are European roses that have been found and brought back into commerce, and that's the love of the roses. And I think there are many people, they're drawn to it, from China's to Damask roses to Noisettes. There's the Ramblers and the Climbers, so many varieties, lots to choose from.
What's most fascinating to me is these are roses that are so old and lost that they're pre-hybridization.
And everything we do here is on its own rootstock. We don't do anything grafted, any of that stuff. It's on its own rootstock. It's doing its own thing. When it leaves our field, we grow them out in a 2-gallon pot. So you've got a good, solid root mass and a very healthy plant on top of that. And of course, we have our custom shipping boxes and all that stuff, so everything arrives to you safe and sound.
You're on what, 7 acres out here in the country?
This is 9 acres on this side, and it's 21 acres on our production side around the corner over here.
Currently, we're growing 101,000 roses.
Wow.
In production fields for release next year.
That's crazy.
It's an amazing amount of roses, and there's definitely more room for increased production as well as we continue to grow. One of the new things that Mike was involved in is the breeding program. We've worked and visited with the Rose Genetics Program over at A&M. They're looking at, we're breeding roses to be hardy, resistant to diseases as well, and then also our hybridization is also very much scent specific. Because of the love of the old roses, you can have a great looking rose that may last a long time or have a certain look, certain variety, but we want roses that are bred for smell as well as health.
I remember Mike saying that some of the most beautiful aromatic roses were basically pretty ugly. I kind of remember the cabbage rose.
Yes, sir. But our breeding program, we're going to be continuing that on. And so we're going to continually be taking these old roses, breeding them together and coming up with new varieties. We've got three.
Just released Xena.
Yeah, we just released Xena here back on the 1st of November. She's beautiful. She is gorgeous.
Petite rose that has a really nice fragrance.
Yeah, she smells wonderful.
How do you propagate?
So we have mother plants here in this garden as well as over on the other property.
Naive question, do you take a cutting?
Yes, sir. We take cuttings and then we put them into the small trays into our grow houses. And once they've taken root, then we transfer them into the 2-gallon pots.
And they grow for close to a year before they're released. They need some time to grow up in the pots and be healthy.
Are you guys the go-to place for beautiful aromatic roses?
Oh, definitely.
For sure.
But there really isn't or wasn't that much competition.
I mean, there's some other good rose growers out there. Mm-hmm. This is a different thing that we're doing here with these roses. So when we had the big snowmageddon, it was awful. And my mother-in-law's property and father-in-law's property had 268 roses, I think. A lot of roses out there. Of course, after the 2 weeks of really, really cold, harsh weather.
This is zero, right?
Yes. And I mean, I called Mike. Everything had burned back. It looked terrible. I said, Mike, you know, what do I need to do? And he said, Jimmy, you already know what to do. Just whack them off 12 inches above the ground with your steel chainsaw and they'll come back. And all but two of them did.
That's fascinating.
So that's this kind of rose.
So even though you guys have acres and acres of roses, there is much more to the Rose Emporium than just roses. This is a destination.
Exactly. It's a destination garden. We have a full-service nursery, so we have all kinds of plant material from vegetables, herbs, natives, perennials, lots of color. We have a wonderful gift shop with lots of new items in it. We've opened up the Heritage Gallery, which is an antiques for sale. On the south side of the campus, we have a chapel, beautiful gazebo that's covered in roses, and an event center. So
this is a wedding destination.
Wedding destination. We host family reunions. We have garden parties, painting classes, potting classes. You know, anything that you would want to come out and be outdoors for. We have artists come out and set up their easels, and they'll be painting in the gardens. We've had people come out and bring their yoga mats and just enjoy being in the gardens.
That's really cool. And there's no fee for entry.
There is.
Like you said, there's a couple or a whole family, extended family, that hung out all day. And
yeah, they hung out all day. They just had a picnic and had a ball, and it was awesome.
It's really fun. We've actually seen families come in that the parents married here, and now their children are getting married here, and 3 and 4 generations are visiting.
That's really cool. So when does it technically date from the founding of the Rose Emporium?
This is our 40th year, 84. 1984 yep. is when it was founded.
You're so close to Texas A&M, it follows that you would have groups and classes and events out here from the college.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. I'm class of 83. My dad was class of 56, and it goes on back and back and back and back from there.
We do have horticulture classes come out and visit and tour the propagation and production areas as well.
Do you have any interns from Texas A&M?
We actually have 2 students working with us right now, and we're increasing our intern program.
Really cool.
But the other thing that's really cool is this is the birthplace of Baylor University.
This is?
Right around the corner.
Right around the corner here. Just, wow. I mean, you can throw a rock almost and hit the original campus. And we maintain that property for Baylor University. And so every year in the spring, they have what's called line camp. And that's where they bus all these kids out here for a month and a half, 2 months. And I mean, big, nice luxury buses. And all these kids come out and they learn about the history of Baylor and where Baylor University was started. And
history in this little community.
Yeah.
It's tremendous. It's tremendous. I mean, this road right behind us is Sam Houston Road, because right down the street from us is where Sam Houston got baptized in Rocky Creek.
So this literally, the county is known as the birthplace of Texas.
Yes. Yeah,
a moment absolutely. On that.
Yeah, and we've got Washington on the Brazos just a few miles down the road where the Texas Constitution was drafted. It's amazing.
Interesting that this didn't become a Houston or a Dallas.
Houston's moving out here. Houston's moving out here pretty quick.
How long does it take to get to Houston?
About an hour, 45 minutes to an hour, depending on which part of Houston you're in.
And a little more to get to Austin?
About an hour and a half to the middle of Austin.
Yeah.
and about 3 hours to 4 hours to the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And so we have people come from all over. We've hosted a Mother's Day brunch, and a family from South Texas drove up a 6-hour drive to come up to our Mother's Day brunch.
Yeah, so. 6 hours each way. Each way.
It's pretty amazing.
Sounds like Australian outback people.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know,
Texas is a little big.
Texas is a pretty large state. So, yeah.
A little more depth on how this happened for you. You know, you're at Texas A&M. Were you agronomy? What did you think you were going to do?
My background was in rangeland ecology and management. And so I ended up becoming a ranch broker. And I did that as a buyer's representative. So the client would come to me and tell me what they were looking for, and I'd go out and search it out and find it. And while I was doing that, I was still working for my dad's landscape architectural firm.
And where was this?
In San Antonio. Daddy did the San Antonio Riverwalk in 1968 for the Hemisphere International World's Fair. He had a blessed career. He did a lot of really great projects. USAA's corporate headquarters, HEB's corporate headquarters, Valero, Tesoro, I mean, Citicorp, Fiesta, Texas, all of the Lock and Terra stuff, and the golf courses. And so that's how I knew of this. It was because of my father's practice. Man, when Kim found it on the internet,
Mike had listed it for sale.
There was an article in the newspaper that he was looking to retire, and he was considering selling the garden side of the business. And so we had a conversation, as that was something, if where we were at in our lives, it was time to start considering the next thing. And so we did.
Yeah. Here we are.
And here we are at 64 years old.
Start a new career.
Starting a whole new thing. It's really good.
To learn more about your world, where would you take us?
You can find us at antiqueroseemporium.com, Facebook, and Instagram. The handles both is also Antique Rose Emporium.
And to get here from College Station, Brian?
We're about 30 minutes south of College Station, an hour and a half east of Austin, 15 minutes north of Brenham, and about an hour to hour and 15 minutes north of Houston.
Yep. And so we're right here in the middle of everything, so there's no excuse for you not to come see us. It's a beautiful drive and a beautiful destination.
My name is Kim Keeter.
And my name is Jim Keeter.
Jim, Kim, what a pleasure. This is great.
Well, thank you so much for having us and visiting with us.
My pleasure. And I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from the birthplace of Texas. We'll see you here.
There's a yellow rose in Texas I'm going there to see. No other fella knows her, nobody, only me.
Owner Mike Shoup says that he believes in gardens with roses rather than rose gardens. Shoup is also known as the Rose Rustler for his tenacious, never-ending quest to find and revive lost or forgotten roses that were popular in gardens of early Texas and throughout the world. The roses are often rescued from pioneer cemeteries and abandoned homesteads. Come along and join us as we visit with the legendary Rose Rustler at his Independence Emporium, Mike Shoup.
Promise to come back again and never let me go. She's the sweetest rose of color a cowboy ever knew. Her eyes are bright as diamonds.
Mike, this is an absolute honor and a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's wonderful to have you. It's just a beautiful evening.
Before we get going, I want to know about the yellow rose of Texas. Somebody told me it's not from Texas.
Well, there's a lot of folklore about the yellow rose of Texas. Several stories abound. One of my favorite is that the true yellow rose of Texas was a mulatto lady who entertained Santa Anna the night before he had to fight. And he was so exhausted the next day that Texas quickly won. And so that's how Texas got its independence. So she's the true yellow rose of Texas. But if you talk about it horticulturally, I think folklorists look to the fields in the deserts of Texas and they see yellow flowers that abound. And if you go out and look at them, they look like perfect roses, but they're on cacti. It's the Opuntia cactus that is all over. And so that may have been the true yellow rose of Texas as well. And if you really want to talk about if it's a true rose, then the story might be of Harrison's yellow or of the Lady Banksia rose, which were certainly around when Texas was a republic. And so it could have been that rose that they were writing about.
Let's get to the heart of the matter here, and that's you as a rose rustler. That's cool.
Well, Texas rose rustling conjures up this image of this, you know, black-clad horseman riding on his horse in the middle of the night with a shovel tossed over his shoulder so that he can pillage the neighborhood of all their plans. But that image was really for publicity. The truth of the matter is it's really the search and rescue of lost and forgotten roses. And there's so many wonderful roses that have survived through the test of time, living in places like cemeteries where a loved one would honor the deceased and plant a rose by their headstone. And lo and behold, many years later, you know, the family may have passed on, but the rose continued to live, a true time-tested survivor.
Tagline that you got out of that.
Well, certainly. If you have roses that live in cemeteries, you know, if dead people can grow them, then anybody can.
I love it.
That's the Texas Rose Rustler's motto. But it really kind of points to another thing, and that is that these are the roses that have proven themselves. They're not the weaklings that have long since died. You're only privy to the ones that have not had the help from human hands that have been able to survive. So if we're bringing them back into our modern gardens, we have a wonderful source of plants that are tough, that belong in our modern gardens. Not only that, when we do research about these roses and we bring them into our gardens, we realize they have virtues and traits that modern roses don't have. Modern roses, being bred for their perfect flowers, have a lot of the characteristics that were inherent in the older varieties that really make them charming, like fragrance, like diversity of form, where they can fit and embellish architecture of home, to be planted with other plants, not to be quarantined in a rose garden.
Would the older roses typically be a tea sort of scent, or is there the whole breadth?
It's the whole breadth, and that's what's so nice about old garden roses, is that the fragrance is kind of the emotional tie that a visitor might have with this rose. I remember fondly when we first put on our climbing Cecile Bruner, the climbing sweetheart rose, and an elderly lady came up to the rose, and you can almost, you know, as she smelt the rose, she turned around and with tears welling up in her eyes says, "I haven't smelt that since I was with my mother 30 years ago." It's that kind of vehicle that fragrance is. It takes you back. It is the memory. It's the tie. It's the emotional tie. And many of these old garden roses have that nuance of fragrance, many of them in different forms.
You were saying earlier they have an intensity of aroma that you might not get today on a hybrid.
Many of our modern roses, unfortunately, have been bred for their perfect form, but fragrance was not one of the characteristics that they bred for them. So fragrance is lacking. In my way of thinking, if you hold up a beautiful rose and you smell it and it doesn't have any fragrance, you could just as well be looking at a beautiful rose in a book. There's nothing that makes it different. They're both beautiful, but fragrance transforms that quality into one of memory and one of emotional tie. And so many of the old garden roses have damask, have tea, have lemon, have different types of fragrances which help you remember that particular situation when you smell them.
Is it easy to take cuttings of a rose and to stick them right in the soil and grow?
Yes, roses are very forgiving about their ability to root for you, and we have several methods that we suggest will work for the homeowner or for the explorer. When you find a rose, you can take a cutting of a stem that's a little less than pencil size and diameter, preferably on a rose that's just bloomed. That's the perfect age. 4-inch cutting is a good size with a couple of leaves on it. We take those, if we're lucky to be able to get a couple of cuttings from a rose without hurting that rose, then that's what we'll do. Bring it back to our greenhouse by putting it into wet paper towels in a baggie, preferably in a cool ice chest or somewhere where it doesn't get hot. Once we get it back to the nursery, we'll stick it into some well-drained potting soil, maybe in a little pot under a mist system. Now, a homeowner can use a Ziploc bag of potting soil that's moist and can put the cuttings in that and zip that Ziploc bag.
A little baby greenhouse.
That's right. Yeah. It's a terrarium. Yeah. And it holds the humidity in there so the plant doesn't dry out. Put it on an east-facing window because that won't get too hot. Mm-hmm. And yet it offers enough sunlight for it to have the energy to form roots. And usually in a 3 to 4 week time, that cutting will root and you'll see roots coming out to the edge of the plastic, and then you'll know you can transplant it into a pot. But that's the best way to root roses. We do it spring and fall. Those are the two seasons that are best as well.
Mm-hmm. And how about first line of defense? I've heard that neem oil is quite good.
Well, here at the Rose Emporium, we've kind of employed a whole new regimen. When I first started, I was part of the chemical plan where I would spray with insecticides and fungicides. Quickly learned that all I was doing was promulgating the need to keep doing that. And I just hated that. And it ruined my love of gardening. So what we do is we discovered that Mother Nature doesn't do that. And most of the plants default to health with her. So we wanted to mimic what Mother Nature was doing, and so we would plant a diversity of plants, roses and perennials and different things, and then we took and started making sure that they were well mulched, creating their own compost. As the microbes would break down the mulch, they would provide the living soil that provided the nutrition and all the bonuses that you get from that type of compost and from that kind of mulching effort. But even more miraculous was the fact that we took compost, and we learned this from a Dr. Elaine Ingham, who taught us that if you can take compost and all the good microbes, the bacteria, the fungi, the things that are actually have been created liaisons with plants since the beginning of time, take these good guys that are in compost and actually grow them. And so we would put them in a nutrient solution of water with some fish fertilizer or fish emulsion or fish proteins, which is their food source, along with some molasses and humates and some of the things that they feed on, and then aerate it. Make sure that it's aerated like with an aquarium bubbler. Therefore, they have the oxygen that's necessary. They don't go anaerobic, which would create the stinky smells and certainly not produce the type of life that you want to put on plants. But the aerobic bacteria or the aerobic populations of microbes are all the beneficial ones. And so we created a super population of this material by doing this, sprayed it on our foliage in our nursery and our herbs and our plants and even our vegetables. And lo and behold, we had plumper leaves, much healthier plants, even plants that had mildew. It was like the good guys would eat the mildew and the black spot off the foliage. So now we use this approach totally in our garden. It's totally organic, and the health of our plants is like it's never been, and it's a joy to be in it. We have the life of the garden is full with birds, butterflies, bees, and it's just a whole lot more pleasant.
And that's basically your first and last line of defense then.
That's correct. We just kind of mimic what Mother Nature does, embellish that, try to create a hypodermic needle, if you will, of the good guys that live in compost, and they are your armies. They are the ones that mine for your micronutrients. They are the ones that mine for the fertilizers. They are the ones that help gather water for your plants, as well as the defenses for fighting off the predators. So it's just a simple message and very common sense, but it has worked wonderfully for us.
Some of the new modern hybrid roses are almost so perfect, you know, so picture postcard. Do you ever by coincidence bump into some ancient abandoned rose growing in a cemetery that you go, oh my gosh, what a specimen?
You know, the beauty of roses is their diversity. And a lot of the modern roses have been bred for that beautiful high center and for the layers of multi-petals that imbricate over themselves and the strong stems that they are. They're truly exhibition roses. And that's what the breeders have achieved and wanted to achieve. But when you go to an old rose, you go into a different form. Some are quartered, some are flat, some are thickly petaled like cabbages, and that's the cabbage rose name for some roses. Some are single. But all of them have a charm and a beauty that is very endearing based on your association with them or your efforts in growing them. And so that's what's important. To think that a rose has to be a certain form does not make it beautiful. Many of these old garden roses, because they have nodding form and dripping qualities and different quartered looks, are charming in their own right because of that.
How about diseases relative to the old pre-hybrid?
I think that that's one of the other things that make old garden roses stand out is the fact that they're typically more disease resistant. They haven't had the breeding to the extent that they have become weak. And so you're dealing with a rose that has been able to withstand the onslaughts of mildew and black spot and live despite it.
It isn't that they don't get it. It's that it doesn't...
Exactly. They don't succumb from it. So what's nice about that is you as the gardener don't have to put the backpacks on and spray them. Mm-hmm. You know that they're going to be here for the long haul, and that's what makes old roses so charming.
And your background, going way back in...
My wife and I went to Trinity University. I specifically was interested in the life sciences, graduated in biology, and then I went on and further had a degree in horticulture at Texas A&M. That's where I realized that this was kind of under my skin and had to do something with it, and had no idea I'd grow roses. I'd never had a fascination with roses. In fact, I swore I'd never have anything to do with roses. But the epiphany came when I found roses growing where they had no care from man's hands, knew that these plants were here to stay and became involved with the old garden roses, the ones that truly have a lot of traits that our modern roses unfortunately have had bred out of them.
So it was a moment in a cemetery then where your life was changed.
Yes, I didn't die, but I certainly changed. Now I call myself a rosarian, something I swore I'd never do.
We've been speaking with Mike Shue. Tom Wilmer, reporting from Independence, Texas.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station.
I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.